White House Press Corps veteran Helen Thomas has some advice for President Obama, and for that matter, all future presidents. In her new book, Listen Up, Mr. President, Everything You Always Wanted Your President to Know and Do, Helen Thomas warns, don't hide, Mr. President. The more distance between the president and the reporters who cover him, the more antagonistic the relationship, creating still more distance. Helen Thomas has covered every president since John Kennedy and joins us from the offices of Hearst Newspapers, where she's a columnist. And if you'd like to join the conversation, have a question for Helen Thomas about her long career covering the White House, give us a call. 800-989-8255 is the number. Our email address is talk@npr.org, and you can join the conversation at our website. Go to npr.org and click on Talk of the Nation. And NPR political editor Ken Rudin is still with us, and Helen Thomas joins us now. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you.
So we were just talking with David Carr of the New York Times about the Obama administration's relationship with Fox News. What's your view on that whole fracas?
A dog won't hunt. I think it's a folly on the part of the White House to take on Fox. I think they should simply do its own work that has, and it certainly has a full plate. So just ignore it.
So consider
the source.
So by ignore it, you mean not grant interviews, but also not engage?
No, I'd grant interviews. It doesn't matter, but I mean, keeping up a feud doesn't make sense.
Is there a model you think that the Obama administration should look to for a president who did well with a potentially adversarial press source?
I think you need lots of humor. And you need lots of communications. You need regular news conferences and strengthen your point of view.
Helen, it's Ken Rudin here. Do you see any comparison at all to the situation between Richard Nixon's enemies list and Barack Obama's perhaps so-called enemies list?
No, I don't. I really think that this is kind of a one-on-one situation. I think that basically Obama does not feel that way about the press. I think there certainly is some validity in being unhappy with bias, but on the other hand, every president has had to go through that. Every president hates us anyway.
So why does it matter to have a good relationship with the White House press corps if every president hates you?
Well, it's very important to them to get their message out at any cost.
So what does a good relationship look like?
A good relationship is maybe a news conference every week, in fact. President Roosevelt, during World War II, had two press conferences a week. I admit he was very much in control and so forth. But I think that you have to hold the president accountable. He's the one on target. He's the one making decisions, not only for the United States, but for the whole world. War and peace and so forth. So I think that constant questioning of a president is very, very important.
A lot of people have said, especially recently, that the White House press corps isn't doing much original reporting anymore. How do you respond to that?
That's true.
What do you think has changed?
It certainly was true during the run-up to the war in Iraq. I mean, we're very, very clear. President Bush wanted to go to war at any cost and without cause, and reporters just let him do it without really questioning why. The whole why has never been answered. We're getting out of Iraq eventually, and declaring a victory and leaving, but it's been so costly in humanity.
Helen, the press corps, as you just pointed out, the press corps was rightly chided for not asking the important questions in the run-up to the war. Do you think the press corps is asking the correct questions, the right questions, with the Obama administration?
No. I think they should know why are we in Afghanistan? What are we doing there? Killing and dying for what? In a very primitive land where these people are bound to fight for their own country, no matter who they are and who's leading them, and probably no matter how oppressive is their government.
How much has...
Their country is what I'm trying to say.
Right. When you talk about the need for a president to have regular press conferences to take advantage of the press's ability to get their message out, how much control can any president have in the current media environment with so many different news sources, of so many different methods of delivery, with so many different levels of editorial judgment?
He still has the bully pulpit. He still speaks to the country, and he still orders the country, makes decisions that affect us all and affect the world. So there's tremendous power there. He hasn't been devalued.
Let's take a call from David in Stockton, California. David, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Well, thank you very much, and hello, Helen. I've been listening to you since I was about 8 years old in 1963, I think. I remember you first. My question is this. How do you think 24-hour news channels have affected, with the need to fill 24 hours a day with news, how that's affected what the news cycle is? And, you know, people talk about, well, in the old days, Walter Cronkite or people like you talked about the news and there wasn't all this fluff. And what do you see as the future of news?
More and more I see it, and less and less editing, more and more danger of ruining lives and reputations willy-nilly, because everybody with a laptop thinks they're a journalist. Everyone with a telephone, cell phone, thinks they're a photographer. I mean, there's no place to hide. I don't see it lessening, if anything. I think, you know, the question of communications is great, but also without any real accuracy that you can really count on, and I think you could in newspapers, the good old newspapers, where you would really be sued for libel in a minute if something went wrong and if you landed on the front page with a story that was inaccurate. Well, it's a whole new world, and solutions have to be found to hold people accountable.
Let's take a call from Jim in Seven Black Hills, South Dakota. Jim, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hi, thank you. Thanks for taking my call. It's a two-part question. I'm just wondering, of the many presidents Helen has dealt with over the years, who was the most pleasant and who was the most antagonistic?
They're all pleasant when they're not on target and when they're not having to be accountable. I think that what's really a great president has courage, compassion, and really has great convictions. I think most important also is a sense of humor. Certainly that was John F. Kennedy in terms of wit. And I think that all the presidents really want to be great. They want to do the right thing, but something happens on the way to the forum.
Ken?
Helen, you've asked a lot of pointed questions of presidents in the past. Is there any question that you wish you had asked a president but didn't get the opportunity to?
I think I'm Monday morning quarterback every time I've ever asked a president a question, because you think about, could I have rephrased it? Should I have asked something else? Would I have gotten a better answer? So you're always editing yourself. So I can say yes, obviously, when you think they're more vulnerable to answering the question. But you never know. And once in a while, you actually may get an answer. Rarely.
Although it sounds like your time in the White House press room has made you more admiring of the office of the president, not more cynical.
Of the office, you said it. Not necessarily those who hold it.
Let's take a call from Robin in Schenectady. Robin, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you. My father was an AP reporter for many years, and they're always on the ground in the middle of the firefight. I remember being in his office in San Francisco, and then he would just take off. So my question is I think that the cable news stations do not serve the public trust or the public good, which is what news is about. And I'm sad to see the demise of Reuters and Associated Press and UPI. What do you think?
I couldn't agree with you more in terms of the demise of newspapers all over the country. Big cities with 3 days of newspaper where they had it every day, of course. I mean, this is a tragedy. We have to figure out something else. I couldn't live without a newspaper, and I think the country should not live without one, no matter what, you know, other the electronic journalism doesn't suit me.
Do you think something else will be developed?
It isn't in depth. I think that our hunger for news will lead to someone being very innovative.
That it's not the desire for news that has died, it's just the dead tree delivery system?
It's money.
We are talking with Helen Thomas. You can join us at 800-989-8255. You can also send us an email at talk@npr.org. You can also go to our website and click on Talk of the Nation. You are listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's hear from Michael in Elkhart, Indiana. Michael, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you very much. Hey, Alan, I got a question for you regarding campaign rumors that get spread, whether it be like the Swift Vote Members for Truth and that kind of issue. It seems like nowadays they report the rumor before they check the accuracy of the rumor. I wonder if you'd comment on that for me. I also want to know who you think the smartest president you covered was.
That's that you're so right about. I think it's become such a big dilemma as to how to negate all of this misinformation, disinformation, which is so deliberate and so terrible. The American people are not well served when people are deliberately manufacturing news and telling lies. My favorite president in terms of, I mean, I don't think that I can judge their intelligence or anything else. I do think I can judge whether they're responsive enough. And none of them really are. Once they get into the Oval Office, the whole iron curtain of secrecy comes down. Everything I think belongs in the public domain becomes their private preserve. They're all secretive.
Well, in some cases, a literal door went up between the press room and the press secretary.
Right. That's exactly right.
Your famous battle with the Clinton administration. Let's hear from Paul in Philadelphia. Paul, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Yeah, how you doing? Helen, remember the question you asked President Obama earlier this year about what country in the Middle East, what's the only country in the Middle East that has nuclear weapons? Because basically earlier on, they were always hammering Iran. So why wouldn't the president? He danced around the question, but he never answered you. Why is that?
No American official has ever said publicly, or no president, that Israel has a nuclear arsenal. Israel will say it. I mean, a lot of Israelis. I don't know why it's the no man's land, but it apparently is. Well, I think, I do know, if once the United States says that Israel has the bomb, has weapons, then it can't really shake the finger at every other nation and say you can't have them.
Did you ever develop a strategy for the non-answer answer? What do you do when a president won't answer?
You keep telling them you're not answering. That's my only weapon. I do that every day to Mr. Gibbs, and he said, "You asked that yesterday. You asked that the day before. Yes," and I said, "and I'm still waiting for an answer." We have this going round.
We've talked a lot about presidents. Which press secretaries do you think set the right tone or did the best in terms of access and control?
Jerry Tahoris, he was President Ford's first press secretary. He lasted 1 month.
And explain why he left.
Well, he was lied to by the counsel of the White House because two reporters, I think New York Times and Miami News, came to him and came to Jerry Tahoris on a Friday and said, "We understand President Nixon is sending an emissary to San Clemente to I'm sorry, President Ford is sending an emissary to San Clemente to pardon Richard Nixon. And he got an immediate, Jerry checked and got an immediately, you know, answer, no, preposterous, no, that isn't true. A couple days later, President Ford pardoned Nixon and Jerry resigned. He represented the highest integrity, doesn't want to lie to people.
Let's take one last call from Jane in Charlotte, North Carolina. Jane, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you, and hello, Helen. I'd like to
Hi.
Go back to something you brought up earlier, which was the lack of editing now. You and
right.
I were both working for UPI 40 years ago, and I will not forget that I got this call in the Harrisburg, Pennsylvania Bureau, and it was you saying, can you take dictation? And I took dictation from you, which for a young reporter was quite a thrill at that time. But I will never forget that you finished dictating a story on the run, and then you said, is that all right? Does that sound right to you? And I, through my career, I so appreciated editors, and wonder if you could talk a little bit more about how editors influenced what you did.
Jane, I'm afraid we have to leave it at that, but I do love that story. Helen Thomas, and, thank you so much for joining us.
And I love it, too. Thank you.
You can read an excerpt from Helen Thomas's book on our website at npr.org. It's about former President George H.W. Bush's problem with, in his words, the vision thing, which Thomas believes is essential for presidents. Also, Ken Rudin, thank you so much for being here with us for the hour.
We didn't ask Helen Thomas whether she Twitters, but we can do
we
that
did
another
not.
Time, no.
Quickly, what are you keeping an eye on this week?
The November 3rd elections, and also what's going to happen with the Democrats in healthcare.
Tomorrow, Neil Conan returns with a look at the booming business of self-help. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Rebecca Roberts in Washington. Awesome.